Welcome to Minority Corner, where we take an introspective look at the world through an intersectional lens. I'm James, he, him. I'm a queer political activist, actor, comedian, self-proclaimed sexy blurred. That's a black nerd. And each week, I'm joined in the corner by other fabulous minorities and some allies tackling the news, pop culture, politics, media, entertainment, and history with a little self-care, self-love sprinkled throughout, all for our own personal and collective empowerment. Well, hello, hello. It is a brand new episode of Minority Corner, y'all, and I am so excited. Get ready for some laughs and some giggles. It is like my new best friend and soul sister, Mackenzie Green, is here. She is the director of social media for BET+. She also serves as the president of the University of Miami Young Alumni Council, board member of the U.S. chapters of the Shoebox Project, holds two Suncoast Emmys, is a proud member of Kappa Kappa Gamma and the Lynx Incorporated, also held the title of Miss DC USA. Mackenzie Green, y'all, just so multifaceted. Oh, wow, we are going to get into it. So Mackenzie and I are both wondering, why hasn't UK pop sensation Little Mix taken over the US? We dive into what is going on, why is the US sleeping on Little Mix, and plus our favorite member of Little Mix, our highly melanated queen, Leanne Panock, did a deep dive documentary that was just released called Race, Power, and Pop, and she explores racism in the UK. It is such a fascinating documentary and really interesting look at anti-blackness across the globe, across the pond, and we get into that. And just when you didn't think you needed more reason to cancel Joss, could you get any more canceled, Joss? We don't know. Gal, our Wonder Woman, has come out with what he said to her on set. And Mackenzie Green brings up, is this new black Superman that I'm very excited about, is it a distraction from the Ray Fisher debacle? Justice for Ray Fisher. Lakeith Stanfield shows us how to properly apologize for accent when you accidentally show up into a clubhouse that turns anti-Semitic. Oof. And then in the main corner, I dive into the history of the real-life Black Samurai, which is now an anime on Netflix about Yasuke. And now I'm going to warn you all that I will butcher a lot of names in this corner, so please bear with me, especially around the name of Oda Nobunaga. I will butcher it, so warning, don't need to tweet at me. I got it, and I think I'm saying it right, Yasuke. Please don't tweet at me. Let me know. But we're going to dive into that. The perfect collaboration showing the connections between Black African culture and Asian culture as well coming together in this amazing story about this real-life Black samurai and touching on some homosexuality in the samurai world. Oh yes, gays, we've been around forever. And then Mackenzie Green gives us a beautiful TED-like talk. And it's okay not to know everything. You can't learn anything you already know. It's a beautiful conversation, really empowering, really liberating, and we're gonna dive into it. So here we go, a brand new episode of Minority Corner happening right now. Time to learn, laugh, and play. Mackenzie Green, I love you so much. I'm so glad that you're here. And this is only our second time hanging out, but I feel like I've known you forever.
I know. That's the way I feel, too. I'm like, whoa, this is wild.
We have Rob Schultz, who's one of the producers at Maximum Fun, to thank for this. He got all of his friends who had a lot of melanin together to watch Vanderpump Rules for the Maximum Fun Drive. And we were like, what are we doing here? But then what a joy to see all these folks at the cookout hanging out, watching these white people act the best.
It was really funny to me because I was trying to. So I don't watch Vanderpump at all. And so when I called my parents and specifically my mom and I was like, oh, I'm watching Vanderpump again for the show. My mom was like, why do you keep doing that show? You don't know anything about these people. And I said, oh, it's like a thing and it's a bunch of people he's had on before getting together. And I was like, so don't worry about it. And then when I got off, she was like, oh, how was it? And I was like, oh, I should have put it together. Everybody was black. Like, it was all black people. that have been on that show. And my mom was like, what a treat. He was, and I was like, what I love about Rob is like not even the shamelessness, but like the honesty. Rob was like, when we were all like, oh, we're all black. He was like, yes. Yes, you are.
Yep,
and I was like,
that's what we're doing here.
This is why I love you, Rob. Like, you are just like,
I appreciate it.
Yeah, I was like, he's
this
not
is how
trying
we
to
do it.
He didn't try to bullshit anybody and be like, oh no, you all have like very unique perspective. It was like, no, I thought this would be fun.
Yeah.
And I was like, and come you were correct. You were absolutely correct.
It was. Actually, it's a great brand. Have a bunch of black people, watch a bunch of white people, act a fool, and it's gonna be
gold. Is a hoot.
I like
it.
I will accept this as one of, not all, but like one of the clauses of reparations of this is part of it, you know, making space for black people.
Truly.
Like,
oh. I mean, just like, what a treat. Like, that to me was like up there with my obsession with that whole TikTok trend about dancing like white girls. Like, it's those kind of like just silly levels of like, yo, you want to come to like our cookout charcuterie board? I saw somebody on TikTok refer to it as you're invited to the charcuterie. And I was like, what a treat. And I think that's kind of silly stuff where it's like, hey, like, you want to give cultural commentary on a thing that feels very intrinsic to us? Like, what a treat. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. I prefer this. Like, I like, oh, look at those silly white people. Not like, oh my God, look at those white people storming the Capitol. Like, I don't like that sort of stuff.
Yeah, no.
Right?
But
I'm like,
who's just like, who truly is just like, I didn't know you were supposed to dance on the beat, not the lyrics. Like, that's the person that I'm like giggling with. And I'm like, this is so silly and I love it. And they're like, and they're right there with you to be like, but they're also simultaneous. Like, it reminds me of my friends, like my sorority sisters, the people in my life who are very like, they're very silly and they're very like, I'm at Popeyes right now. This sandwich is so spicy. I realize I need to use more seasoning. And it's just like, and it's those kind, but it's like, they're also the person that's like, what do you need? So I'm just like, I love it. I love it.
Ah, so good. And then you and I just were hitting it off, disappearing into our own world. And, you know, we were nerding out, which we're going to nerd out a little bit later. And then come to find out, putting the show together, I always bait this. I put this on every show list to see if there's someone who will take the – who you didn't take the bait. You were like, okay, yes, let's go. I got the receipts and we got to talk about this. So, Little Mix, you are also a mixer. And can you also help me understand – why the fuck has Little Mix not blown up in the United States? I don't understand. They're so talented. Sing and dance.
Here's the thing. I was a hardcore Spice Girls person. Like,
Same.
Nothing
would replace them.
Nothing. And I truly, like, there is our powder room in my childhood home is all leopard print because I wanted Scary Spice's room from Spice World movie. And my mother was like, absolutely not. And the concession was like, here, the guest bathroom can be your refuge. And so so when I randomly came across this group, like maybe in college, that had I think they had Mel C was in one of their like first videos, I was like, oh, they have been anointed by the queens. Like, they have been selected
it was
as
their
the
music
takers
video
of
move.
The mantle. Yes, because I was obsessed with that song. Like, I kept thinking because Mel C was in the video, because it was so good, I was like, I'm about to go to a party tonight and they're gonna play it. And I was like, I was ready with my moves to like get you back off the wall. Like, I was so ready.
Yes.
And then I get to this party and nobody's playing it, and I'm like looking at my sisters being like, play Move by Little Mix, like play it. And she's like, who's Little Mix? Get away from us. And so it's just been a lonely journey since college, being like,
it has,
like, just literally just out of nowhere being like, motorbike, bike, and people are like, I don't know what you're saying. And I'm like, it's Little Mix.
Are you guys down with that? Do you guys like that Woman Like Me with Nicki Minaj? What did Nicki do? Like,
or like, you're watching Glee and they're doing Wings and everybody's like, I like that song. That's a cute song. And I was like,
it's Little Mix.
That was like, Ryan Murphy and I have the same musical taste.
And it happens to me every time. I'm like, oh, this is about to be the bop that's about to take off. And I sit and I'm waiting for like when Touch came out, I was like, oh, okay, everyone's about to hit this. It's got that little like Caribbean beat to it. And like, even like their last LM5, we're gonna nerd out hardcore.
Yes, we're
if you don't
hardcore
know what we're talking about,
Mix.
You got homework, because it's so rare to find someone that
it
you
really
can
is.
In fact, I didn't realize I was such a huge fan until all like my friend text threads, they were like, James, all you do is send us like updates about Little Mix or music videos about Little Mix. And like, y'all need to know.
Good. Like, I'm just
they're
like,
They're so good.
Guys.
I found a bootleg copy of their LM5 tour, which was like their most recent one.
I found a bootleg on YouTube also, and I watched it, and I was like, look at these songstresses.
It's so good. I wanted to pay for it, but it wasn't available in US iTunes. I wanted to pay for it.
Or like, I was one of those people when somebody was like, Zayn's dating Perry. I was like, oh wow. The Voltron of like girl group and boy band. Yes. Oh my God. It's happening. Well, and then when they like
did her
broke
dirty.
Up.
He did a Justin Timberlake.
Yes.
He
then when they Justin broke Timberlake up and they wrote Shout Out to My Ex. I was like, this is the greatest song ever. And then I was like, and then when he started dating Gigi, I was like, you know, he was dating Perry. And people were like, who is this Perry you speak
y'all
of?
Y'all need to know. And it's so like, it's so interesting because they're worldwide phenomenons except for in the United States. They're huge like everywhere else. And their music, here's the thing. So why they're so amazing. Like, first of all of them can sing and dance. All of them could have their own solo career, but we got enough solo artists like stick together as a group. It's amazing. They're all friends. They're formed on the X Factor. It's so rare. So they're a manufactured band, but they get along.
Yes.
10 years in the business, 6 albums. Mind you, the Spice Girls had 2 albums and then Jerry left,
and we,
right?
And we lost our minds over those 2 albums.
It was 2 albums. It was like in a span of like 2 years, and we're like, the Spice Girls, like, I don't understand. And they are somehow the first girl group to ever win the Brit Award that just happened.
Yeah, for best pop band. And I adore the, and I think what I also am a real sucker for people that like know those that came before them. So when they won the award and they kept thanking all these girl groups that should have won it long before them, I was like, I'm obsessed with them. And on top of it, like, 2 of them are pregnant. So they're standing up there like these beautiful goddesses and like, you know, friggin' they're out here being like, Black Lives Matter. And I'm like, you didn't have to do that. You didn't have to. You could have been like, we are sitting pretty. We have a black member. We don't need to do this. And then meanwhile, they're like, they're just the shit. I cannot.
They
understand.
Are. And their music is so like, you know, female empowerment.
Yes.
And their latest album, definitely take a listen to it. It's going in a different direction because they've split from Simon Cowell and they're just doing their own thing. And they said when they won, they said, you know, it's not easy being a female in the UK pop industry. We've seen the white male dominance, misogyny, sexism, and lack of diversity. We're proud of how we've stuck together, stood for the group, surrounded ourselves with strong women, and now we're using our voices. His mouth more than ever. Like
you can't.
That's
not
more than girl power. I'm just
that's
gonna
what I'm
say
saying.
That
it's like we. I don't know. I'm a bit. I love this like discourse that's happening now, where people are like, you know, oh, if you got to stand for something, and I'm like, here's a literal band that stands for things. Like, and they make good stuff. It's not like they stand for things and then they're like Sugar Ray, where you're like, oh.
Ooh, okay.
Oh, now I gotta. I'm sorry for the Sugar Ray slander for people out there that were like, "That was my
someone
shit.
Standing." They're like,
"Yeah, somebody right now is like, I have turned
McGrath.
This off, and I'm not coming."
The McGrathies,
back. Yeah,
the McGrathies are big.
Or it's like you're looking and they're having like Grimes rappers on their stuff. It's just. Like,
yeah,
just,
and the last song they have Saweetie on there and she lays it down. They play like drag versions of themselves. They have a good sense of humor. And I watched this last night. So Leanne Panak, who is the highly melanated one in the group, who my eyes just gravitate to her all the time, every time, like when she's performing, like I love her. And she just, and like you said, they don't have to. She just released a documentary that I had to watch a bootleg copy of YouTube. Like, why does America just like have this wall against Little
I'm
Mix
like,
and
guys,
just like
just
a
give
band?
Me their stuff. Like, put it on Amazon.
And I would have had happy to pay for it. I want to give her coins. She made a documentary called Race, Power, and Pop. And she started it last year, which what a year to start doing a documentary. And it pretty much goes through her whole entire journey. And she's exploring, like, she's 29. She's been in this group for 10 years. And you're seeing, like, she's like, oh, my gosh, I've lived in a bubble. Like, both of her parents are both they have Caribbean lineage, right?
Yeah.
They're British, Caribbean lineage. And it's pretty much the whole entire premise is she's like, you know, I've always thought that there is, like, these, you know, how racism existed in her life. And she was like, you know, people were just telling me I was making it up. And she was always feeling she wasn't good enough, or that she, you know, her first day, Beyonce's choreographer worked with them on Wings. And he was like,
yes,
you're the black girl, you're going to have to work twice as hard. And she was like, what? I don't, like, she's never heard anything like this. And it stuck with her. And it wasn't until they flew to Brazil to do a concert, the fans went wild for her. They chanted her name, and she said, I'd never seen so many black people in the audience. And that's when it sort of hit her, because they would be in the UK and they'd ask girls like, who's your favorite? And none of these white girls would name Leanne, and yep, just all these sort of subtle things. And she goes in, and then the murder of George Floyd happens, and you go through her experience of seeing that, and she starts speaking out, and she then goes on this quest to like solve racism in the UK. But she unites like all these other, like Keisha from the Sugar Babes, she unites all these like black female UK artists, and they have a real conversation about being black in the music industry. And it's interesting because in the UK, they don't talk about these things. They exist, happen.
It's fascinating because I think back to, so I work in marketing now. I kind of did some stuff in finance for a while. And at one point I was a finalist for a fellowship that Goldman Sachs does, where they take kind of finance.
Okay.
People right now are like, what are you doing? But like they took people from the US and they took you to Goldman Sachs in the UK to work there. Mm-hmm. And so it was almost this like cross-cultural exchange where it was like, we're taking American financiers and teaching them the UK way of money.
It's like wife swap, but with work and
fancy.
Yeah,
with work. And so I remember like the selling point of the gentleman that ran the program was like, because it was strictly to like black finance people. And I remember his like big selling point was like, the UK is great for you all because racism doesn't exist there.
Okay.
And I remember, so like, that's the thing. And I remember coming
home. Go ask the black women there.
So I remember coming back to my family and being like, Mom, Dad, it's going to be great. Like, Dr. Raymond says, like, we go there and it's, you know, again, I grew up in a very affluent world. My dad worked in finance. So this was not like, right, I was not coming into them with one something that they were like, oh, wow, Goldman. They were like, oh, okay. And so I remember being like, Dad, like, it's going to be great. Like, and he talked about how there's no racism. Like, there's all this, like, I love his other selling point. Was like, there's a lot of interracial dating. And my mom was just like, I know, which I was like, now I look back and I'm like, what a problematic sales pitch. But I remember
you
saying,
can date white people and no one will
literally
care.
He said that to one of the black men at the table. He was like, you can date white women and nobody says anything. And I'm like, what a wild thing that was how you sold it. But
I
remember saying to my mom that, and my mom goes like, well, you know, it was kind of like, what? And I was like, they don't have racism like we have here. And that's what she said the line that I now repeat constantly, like, sweetheart, it was called the transatlantic slave trade. Like,
there we go.
It wasn't just, and I was kind of like, huh? And she was like, they have their own problems, but it's different. And it's
right,
posed different. And it doesn't, you know, she was like, and so like, let's take the rose colored glasses off that this is not like a situation where you're gonna like go to the end of the whiz, where you're gonna like step off the plane in the UK and people are gonna be like,
yes,
welcome, and you're gonna be like,
whoa,
you know, she
no,
was like,
it's very similar. I felt like it's so, like Portland, just because you don't talk about it doesn't mean it doesn't exist there.
Exactly.
Right, like that's how I feel like the UK was, is that it's also very British to not talk about things. It's just like, all right, now get on with it, and we just like they just deal with it or whatnot. And so in this document, it's and then she tries to like, also I didn't realize this, I had a feeling, I knew it, I got confirmation, Jade is of Middle Eastern descent.
I had a feeling. I had the sneaking suspicion.
I
kept thinking to myself, this group is way too self-aware for people to be like tanning themselves like,
right, yes,
a color.
I mean,
they're
Jesse
not. Because I was like, because I was like, for Perry to be
Jesse
so
would.
Fair. Yeah, I was like, for Perry to be so fair, there's no way the other ones are like, but I want to be as close as I can get. Without being in blackface. Like, I was just like,
yes,
there's no way. There's no possible way.
But yeah, and so, and she even said that, like, they talk about it, how the industry, and this is why I'm so glad I'm not a musician. Like, I went down the actor and comedian route because the music industry is fucked up. There is not a lot of people of color at the top. It's some talent, it's some talentless white men, like, telling people what to do. And they were saying, like, how they were pretty much whitewashed in when they were packaged as a group. And, you know, one of the girls, one of the black female artists, oh, they also talk about colorism in this documentary.
She got into all this stuff. She was like, what are the hardest topics we could discuss? I'll do it.
And she went in, and it was all new to her because she'd been living in this bubble for 10 years, but still experiencing them, right? And then, like, and Jade even says that, like, you know, people were saying, like, she, when she was younger and growing up in the North, like, they used to call her, like, you know, darky and all this sort of stuff, as they do in the UK, because they have not solved racism. But then, like, in when they got into the group, they were like, oh, you're a white girl. And she just was like, okay, let me, because she didn't want, she... so that she could pass, and she would just went with it. And so now, because of this, and so I highly recommend this documentary. Even if you don't know Little Mix, you will experience, like, what it's like for just connections of, like, a young black girl's journey through understanding, oh, this is what racism is, or these are what my experiences are.
And I think what I love about what she's doing with the doc is the thing that I always have difficulty expressing, which is, like, what you just said. You're experiencing, you're in it. But there is also a level of, you're like, oh, well, maybe this is just me. Maybe this is just my experience. Maybe this is just because this is how I grew up, or this is the world I live in. Maybe this isn't everybody's thing. And then you kind of have those moments that, like, blow up your paradigm, and you kind of look around and you're like, oh shit, I didn't, oh, okay. This isn't what I thought it was.
Yeah, that was my, it was Michael Brown for me. And then that's why we started this podcast here. So I'm going to do a little playlist, put it in the show notes, like the 10 best Little Mix bops for y'all. If you, so you can get a little charcuterie plate of a Little Mix, if you will, or a little,
you guys are going to lose your minds. And if you don't, you're going to
be so mad. Don't, we're like, you don't have any taste. I'm just going to say it. You don't,
like,
know
truly,
what's good.
If you, like, if you like pop music and you listen to them and you're like, meh, I've heard better. I'm like, what are you doing? What are you doing?
Who are you? Like, they all got pipes, and they all, and then watch their videos and be just in awe, because they all can literally sing and dance, and they're hardcore. And don't watch their live specials and you're like, oh, they're all Beyoncés. They're just four Beyoncés running around.
It's four little Beyoncés, and they're, like, tiny and they're adorable and they're just like, they're the cutest thing
ever. And they're
ever.
Doing the work. They're using their platform. And they're like,
here's my thing.
Everything we've ever asked for in an artist.
Groups that I truly don't understand how people who love pop music don't know about is, I don't understand, like, people that don't like Little Mix or have no clue who they are. And the same with Blackpink. Like, I don't understand how you like pop music.
Doing?
And you're like,
okay.
I'm like, what?
No. You've got some homework to do.
Yeah.
Go and do that homework. And, like, people are losing their shit for One Direction. It's like, okay, no, this is like.
Yeah, I was like, these girls are, like, dropping, flipping, doing splits, like, singing, hitting high notes, and, like, doing all the things. And I'm like, oh, I love them. And they're doing my favorite, the Spice Girls move, which is, like, wearing 18-inch platform shoes. And then, like.
It's your greatest hits of things you love.
Yeah.
Okay, so do want to get, let's put on our nerdy hats now, different kind of nerdiness from our mixer hats. So I just, and it's not hard for me because it didn't happen to me, but I've gotten over it. So I've already made my peace that, like, Joss Whedon is garbage and I'm done.
Yeah, I've made, I was never a Buffy fan, so I have no opinion. Like,
okay,
people who grew up on Buffy were like sobbing.
I was. And Buffy, I've watched it, like, you know, five times all the way through, at least in the past year. Like, I've watched all of his shows, huge fan. And then all this stuff came out that he's a garbage person. And I actually, 2 years ago, did a case point of, like, here's five reasons why Joss Whedon is garbage. Look into the archives. I was already there and already made my peace with it.
Just,
but then
if
else
you need
out,
any
even...
proof, just watch the scene with Hulk and Black Widow in Age of Ultron.
Well, yes.
There you go. Yeah. That's everything you need to know.
All of that, you're like, and then how both the ladies were getting saved at the end of it in the same exact way, being like,
held and carried off like over yeah. the old like the Black Widow don't need it.
The only good thing Whedon ever did was give me Paul Bettany as Vision. Outside of that, fair, could care fair. Less.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So it turns out, you know what? This way you got to side eye your heroes. Okay, thank you for giving me, you know, Buffy and making me feel like I could be a superhero too, even though I'm not a white blonde girl. But I like to kick around. I like to kick yeah. around in my room. But our Wonder Woman, she came out and she was like, yeah, like he pretty much like threatened my career. He was like, you know, I can make your career like really bad. And someone was like, yeah, Joss was bragging about that he had it out with Gal, that he told her that he's a writer and she's gonna shut up and say the lines and make her look incredibly stupid in his movie. And her complaint was like, hey, the continuity from, you know, my last movie that I did is not matching up with this. And he's like, shut up and say my lines. And the other moment when I realized I love you is when we both announced that we both cried at the very end of Falcon and Winter Soldier. And the tail end, someone was like,
oh, I didn't
like,
just cry at the tail end. I started crying the minute he burst through the window. Like Bucky looked up in the air and kind of grinned, I was like, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't. The same thing when Maria Rambo, whichever Rambo.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. When she became Photon, I was crying. Yeah. And I texted one of my friends. I was like, why am I crying? And she was like, I think it's the idea that in our head, we're like, it's a Black woman. She's not from a fictitious African nation. Like, she is a Black girl.
Black woman.
Like, who grew up in the South and like, and is walking and literally walking through hearing the voices of her ancestors transforming into a superhero. And I was like, and then I just was like, give Marvel all their flowers. And then I was like, really?
Give it.
Give Stan Lee all his flowers. Because the fact that this man was like, make all the things.
Right. And the thing, and this is why we're Joss Whedon owes us flowers. And then, but you know what? You brought up a good point to me because, you know, they're talking about all this, you know, stuff with, you know, Joss Whedon and stuff. And then you brought up the point to me. You're like, what about this? Because this whole entire thing is coming out of, you know, the Ray Fisher thing, right? It's really fucked up. Ray Fisher still doesn't have a job. He's still not Cyborg. And they totally, I fell for it hook, line, and sinker because you're like, yeah, but we're not talking about this Ray Fisher thing, but we're talking about Black Superman. I'm like, oh my God, I fell for it. Because they were like, oh, we're going to have a Ta-Nehisi Coates is writing Superman produced by J.J. Abrams. And I'm like, oh, I can't wait for that. And meanwhile, Ray Fisher don't have a job.
Like, that's the thing is so many, I kept like, so I shared on my thing where I was like, I shared like a meme and it was like, I don't want it. And like so many people were like, they were like, you don't want a Black Superman. And then like my Black friends were like, it's Ta-Nehisi Coates. And I was like, okay. I'm going to gather all my receipts to support why this is dumb. And there's an incredible TikToker, Straw Hat Goofy, who did like the perfect, most succinct video where he was like, I don't believe in forced diversity. It's not a real thing, like reverse racism, but this is for, he was like, on Henry Cavill's birthday, you tell us we're getting a Black Superman. He was like, when in reality, Superman's an alien. Like, this could have been your perfect opportunity to be like, guess what? We're getting an indigenous Superman. We're getting an Asian Superman.
Yeah.
We're going to pretend these aliens looked down millennia ago and were like, oh, Native Americans are what they look like. And that's what we sent. And he goes, but you're going to tell me, on Henry Cavill's birthday, we're getting a Black Superman. He was like, when you've not even addressed the fact that the one Black character you did have, you basically wrote him out of a 4-hour movie, and then you took him out of the Flash movie, and like, and you're like, no, don't look over there. And I'm like, no.
Look, you got a Black Superman. Because they really did give us the crown. Yes. And so it's hard. Like, Superman They didn't just like, oh, we're doing, you know, John Stewart, Green Lantern, which would have been, I would have also been going off for. They were like, Superman.
Yeah, they were like, we are taking the thing that even people that know nothing about superheroes lose their mind
over.
And I was like, I don't want it. And then I hate that it's like, you say that, and then it's like all these like, you know, total awful fanboys were like, yeah, I also don't want a black Superman. You're like, you don't want a black Superman because you don't want a black person. I don't want a black Superman
yeah,
for a different reason.
Different. Yes, I also still want justice for Ray Fisher. I think sweet justice would be him getting a job as a Marvel superhero. I think
that's
that
like
would
my whole thing. Like
sweetest.
Low key, I want he and Henry Cavill to like get Marvel games. Like I want that to be their
Henry
comeuppance.
Henry Cavill, like he did not get to do full Superman. Like he
not
just did,
an ounce
won't
of
even
it.
Let him in. They won't even let him do a cameo in Shazam. Like the end credit sequence for Shazam, they wouldn't
oh
even
my
let
God.
His
don't even get me
like
started.
They
where
had
it's
a
just
body
like,
double.
Yeah, they had like a body like, double standing there, and I was like, "What?" Is and then the crazy
on?
Part is the get, only movie they've done well is Shazam, and I'm like,
"I know."
So I'm like, "Okay,
with
guys, maybe."
Also, Megan Good popping up in there. I'm like, "Okay,
that
I see you,
still
Megan
to
Good.
This day was like."
The, she's like, coming back for the sequel.
Like the way people talk about like pop outs where they're like, and something like an M. Night Shyamalan did this, and I was like, what? Like that was me in the theater when that little girl turned into Megan Good. I was like, oh my
Good,
God!
Like,
I lost.
Okay.
I lost my mind in the theater.
So
I was like,
I was on an airplane and lost. The plane almost went down.
I didn't like, and I had my mother with me, who again hates superhero movies. Doesn't hate them, but she's like, I don't know what I'm watching. I don't.
Her, yeah. Right.
I don't understand
I don't
any
happening.
Of this. She's like,
yes.
I don't know who these people are. She's like looking at Zachary Levi and she's like, he's cute. I was like, he's very cute. And she's just like, mm-mm. And then all of a sudden she just goes, is that Mega Good? And I was like, apparently. Like, but truly, I'm like, my whole thing with DC is like, maybe your bread and butter is not the core four. Like, maybe you need to do Black Adam, Shazam. Like,
oh, yeah.
Maybe where you guys are going to establish yourselves are like, we can take like the Squirrel Girls of the MCU kind of mm-hmm. characters and make a good
yeah.
movie out of them.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's truly like,
yeah.
I'm just like, guys, Cyborg. Well, I didn't know what this man did until I watched the 4-hour Justice League. And I was like, oh, he can change the ATM? Like,
okay, he could do all that. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I mean, just, and they're like, oh, he's too angry. And so anyways, you were right. Thank you for like, cause I took the bait. It's going to be, but what they're going to do is they're going to be like, and he's been played by Michael B. Jordan. And you're just going to be like,
oh, you know, they are.
It. Oh my God. That's what they're gunning for. So hopefully he'll be too busy somehow doing Black Panther 2.
I wrote on my Insta, like, I hate that this is a hill I'm going to have to die on, because the problem is I'm going to have to go see the movie. I'm going to have to be like, it was a movie.
Gonna
like, I'm going to have to. Ta-Nehisi yeah.
Ta-Nehisi Coates is going to write a great
like,
script
that's
with
the problem. It's
going to
be brilliant,
like,
and it's going to be beautiful, and it's going to be cinematically gorgeous. And I'm probably going to find myself like bawling, but I'm also going to be like whispering under my breath as I'm crying, like, justice for Cyborg. Like,
yeah, 100%. Maybe they'll find a way to, like, I don't know, squeeze him in and I don't know. Okay, well, we were going to talk about Hoteps, which I know that you weren't jazzed about, but we're running out of time.
Thoughts.
I don't know if we can even do quick thoughts, but I do want to just say, there's a link in the show notes. Lakeith Stanfield accidentally ended up in a Clubhouse chat room that turned anti-Semitic. This is why you got to be careful with them Clubhouses. He just popped into a room. It's supposed to be about Louis Farrakhan, which, I mean, you just got to be careful when that's
you
the
already stepped into an anti-Semitic room when you were like, I'm in a room about Louis Farrakhan.
God. And they made him a moderator. And I will say what he did learn is that he should have condemned the speech as it was happening. But I will say, I've been in that moment before where something's happening and you know you're supposed to say something as in like an accomplice and an ally, but it's sort of that fight, flight, freeze kicks in. I definitely have been in moments where I just like, I didn't know what to say. And then afterwards it was like, oh shit, I should have been like, fuck you, that is wrong, don't say that.
I'm
well,
learning
I
that
have,
I must
I appreciate
be an
that
asshole.
He came out.
I really am learning through all these, like when I hear people be like, and I've been in, because I will be like, if somebody says some bullshit, I'm like, what? And then I'll just leave. And they're like, Mackenzie, where are you? I'm like, not here. Like,
so that would have been you. And they're like, we got Mackenzie Green. And now we're going to say
yeah,
some anti-Semitic stuff.
Yeah,
you're like,
and then I'd been,
bye.
And they would have just heard that, like, the door closed and been like, what?
I love it. Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break. And then we're going to talk about the first, or I don't know. No, it is the first. We're going to talk about a black samurai. Yasuke.
Well, it's spring again.
Or is it summer? I mean, what is time? What is going on here? But either way, it may be time for a change, especially around the house. See what we're doing here? So how about a change that makes you super comfortable and your home look good, right? Gotta look good, feel good. Enter Brooklinen. So Brooklinen was started to create beautiful, high-quality home essentials that don't cost an arm and a leg. Thank you, goddess. Brooklinen works directly from manufacturers to make luxury available directly to you without the luxury level markups. Ain't nobody got time for that. So this way, you get their amazing array of products at a reasonable price. Brooklinen has something for every comfort need, ideal for a seasonal refresh, because they're launching new products, colors, and patterns all the time. New season, new you, let's go. Y'all know I've been talking about this for months, by Brooklinen sheets. I got them in the winter, and here we are going into the spring, into the summer, and they're still serving me realness. Sleep queen realness. I love them. I can't say enough about them. They're comfortable. They're cozy. They look very adult. I'm, you know, really trying to kick into being an adult, and Brooklinen has got me covered. So give yourself the comfort refresh you deserve and get it for less at Brooklinen. Go to brooklinen.com and use promo code MINORITY to get $20 off with a minimum purchase of $100. That is brooklinen.com and enter promo code MINORITY for $20 off with a minimum purchase of $100. Once again, that is brooklinen.com, promo code MINORITY.
The 2021 pin sale has begun. Thank you so much to everyone who participated in the Max Fund Drive. This is the last year for a while that we'll be doing pins for Max Fund Drive, and the fifth year that we'll be selling pins and donating all proceeds to charity. The past year proved what we already knew, that having access to the internet at home is a necessity for work, school, healthcare, and keeping in touch with family and friends. So the proceeds from this year's pin sale will go towards Everyone On, a nonprofit working to bridge the digital divide. We're grateful that with your support, we'll be able to help low-income folks gain access to affordable computers, internet services, and digital literacy programs. The sale will run until May 28th. Folks at the $10 monthly level and above will have access to all of the pins from the drive. That's 38 pins, one from every show on the network. We also have a special 2021 Max Fund Drive pin that all members can purchase. Go to MaximumFun.org/pinsale for more info. And to learn more about Everyone On and support them directly, you can go to EveryoneOn.org.
It is API Heritage Month, and I came across, this came from a tweet from one of our listeners, at Nearsighted Puka. They tweeted, "I really hope Minority Corner gives Yasuki some boosting because it's revolutionary. It's an anime based on the probably first black samurai who served under Oda Nobunaga." Actually, I don't know if they ever did a history lesson about him on MK, but I think it's overdue. Asking, you shall receive. You don't open your mouth, you don't eat. And I appreciate you for flagging this to me, because I probably maybe would have skipped it. There's so much content. Squeaky wheel gets the grease. And this came, I read that tweet and I was like, I'm sold. Black Samurai? What? So it is, it's a Netflix show. I will say this. I know that you haven't seen it. An anime is as nerdy as you are. You haven't quite broached that yet. It's only six episodes. It's six episodes. That's it.
Anime is a gateway drug. Like, once you step into that,
it is. Like, yes. I can give you a list. Full Metal Alchemist is really great. Sailor Moon, you can't go wrong. And you know who?
Okay.
You know who does the voice of Yasuki? And I might be saying this wrong, but y'all, I am doing my best. And I know I watched all six episodes and I should know, but they barely call him that. They call him like other things. Nothing too offensive, because he is still black. But I thought that this was the perfect sort of, you know, intersection of, you know, blackness and Asian cultures in this black samurai. And Lakeith Stanfield does the voice. And so it all comes full circle.
It all comes back.
It all comes back to Lakeith. And Yasuke. I don't know. I'm doing my best. It was regarded as the first ever foreigner to be given warrior status in Japan. He served under Oda Nobunaga, who was one of the most important feudal lords in Japan's history, and he was seeking out to unify Japan. And they were like best friends hanging out, and I'll get to that in a moment of how that came to be. But this series, it was created by LaShawn Thomas and Japanese animation studio MAPPA. And like I said, Lakeith Stanfield does the voice, and Flying Lotus does the soundtrack. And before Chadwick's death was announced, Chadwick was going to play Yasuke. I know they're going to get all the tweets. I'm going to get all the tweets today. he was going to play Yasuke in a film based on the warrior's story. So we were going to get a live action version of it.
I had heard about that. Yes, yeah. I had heard about that.
Yeah. And so it's like, again, like it's like one of these stories. It's like, yeah, we should have been had this. Like, sorry, Tom Cruise. Ain't nobody really cared about you being that the last samurai. Get them on my face. Okay. But so this Netflix story, it's based on the story of him, but also like there are giant robots and superpowers and magic. Which also did happen. But then actually when I learned about his actual history, they really do ride that wave of it. Like it is just really like, oh, these are the things that did happen, but they add in all this like, you know, anime That's magic. Cool. And Ming-Na Wen is also doing one of the voices and just love her for life. So early life. Well, not much is known about him because, you know, these were different times. He wasn't really rich. So until he met a feudal lord, no one was really keeping tabs on him. But some think that some people, there's some debate about, you know, his origin story. Some think that he was a slave, but I do want to remind everybody, not all Africans were slaves. So it could be that that was not the case. But there is this author, Thomas Lockley, who's a co-author of African Samurai, The True Story of Yasuke, a Legendary Black Warrior in Feudal Japan. Quite a title, but it tells you, it's one of those titles, you got to have a title because you're like, I need people to know everything that this is about.
Yeah, it's one of those titles that requires a colon and several commas. Yes. Oh, it is. To explain it.
You literally, yes, absolutely. There's a colon, there's a comma. But that way, like, you're just like, what's this book about? Oh, like, I need that, all the words out there, all the words.
Yes.
Well, they said that they believe that he was actually a free actor, that he might have been enslaved as a child, taken from Africa to India, but he could have been a military slave or indentured soldier, but he definitely got his freedom by the time he had made his way over to Japan. So in 1579, Yasuke arrived in Japan, and he was with this Italian Jesuit named Alessandro Valigano, and he was probably his bodyguard because back then priests weren't allowed to have soldiers or guards. I don't know if they are they allowed to now. I don't know if that's them was the rules. You're on your own, which people were always trying to kill these priests, and they weren't, you know, but they were allowed to have valets or manservants who also happened to know how to handle some weapons. So that's what it's built. So Yasuke was his bodyguard, you know, keeping him safe. And they were traveling through India, and then they made their way to Japan. And Valigano was on his way to meet Oda Nobunaga in Kyoto to get permission to leave Japan. A lot of questions that I did not get answered. What a wild time. You needed, can I leave? I'm here. It's been
great.
Can
I leave this place?
I'm ready to go. Is that okay? So a little backstory of Oda Nobunaga. He is this historic warlord of Japan that nearly succeeded in uniting Japan under his crest. And Nobunaga scoffed that. This is one of the pins that we're going to put in for next week, so to be continued. But Nobunaga, he scoffed at traditions of a traditional Japan. He was like, I'm not there, done for that. And under his rule, he brought Yasuke under his retainer, which that was a huge sort of deal because Yasuke was not from that land. And he just was like, yeah, whatever, this guy's really great. And so he also, Nobunaga, had an unabashed romantic lover, Mori Ramuro, who was a dude. So love this. I love this That's for you, really Oda cool. Nabongo.
No, I'm obsessed with this.
A gay warlord. A gay lord. A literal gay lord. I'm here for it.
A literal gay lord.
And not in an offensive way. Like, what a time. I was born in the wrong time period. I would love to live under the gay lord. So we're going to go back to that. Like, and so actually sometimes when they tell the story of stories of Oda Nobunaga and Mori Ranmaru, sometimes they will make Mori a woman so they don't have to explain. Yeah, they're just, you know. So
what a treat. We don't want to confuse anybody.
So, yo, this would be so confusing for people. And so in the Netflix show, when Nobunaga first met Yasuke, Yasuke had just won a fight in the streets, and Nobunaga's like, okay, who this? Okay, I like the way he be fighting and like handling his shit. And oh, and this is actually, so this happens in the Netflix series and actually happens in real life. He asked Yasuke to be, he's like, okay, you're really great, come with me, let's just clean off your skin because you're covered in dirt, because they had never seen a black person before.
No, they were like, what is happening?
Yes. And he's like, I'm not dirty. And he's like, oh, did you ink your black skin, like, just, you know, cover it all in like tattoos, like it's just all inked and tattooed. They literally were so perplexed that people have just never seen a black person before in Japan. So this little island far away from everybody. And so, yeah, so he didn't believe that his true skin color was black. And I think this also just, he was just like, oh, okay, this is dope. Look at this man. He'd be fighting. He got this dark skin. You hanging out with me. He threw a huge party to welcome him. So I love that. I hope that we keep this, you know, custom for when you and I, we go to Japan, that they just... Yes.
Crossing my fingers.
They're going to throw us a big party. We'll have to deal with it. Like, oh, I don't want to hear any comments about my skin, though. Let's just want to, I want the party. None of the comments. And yeah, so he then entered the feudal lord's service within the next few days. He was like, bam, you a samurai. You hanging out with me. Let's go kill some people so we can unite this country through murder. Hey, gay lord's got to do what a gay lord's got to do.
He's got to do.
Yeah, you got to throw it down. So, but I will say, like, I learned this, that the word samurai was fluid. You didn't have to possess any particular killing skills. So anybody who took up a weapon on behalf of a lord could technically call themselves or be called a samurai. So keep That's that in cool. mind. Just get a sword. If you're following a lord, you're a samurai if you want to.
You're a samurai.
Yeah. So eventually other foreigners from Africa, China, and Korea were also employed similar to Yasuke, but he is the first recorded, and none other were in the service of Nobunaga. That's what it is. I'm saying this wrong the entire time. I'm sorry. Nobunaga. Oh, we'll just dub that over every time I said that. So he's the only one that was in service of Nobunaga. And there are several records of black Africans serving more minor lords, but we don't know much about them because they were minor and not major lords, major gay lords. You gotta go to the top. You want that credit and be in the history books. So, in the end, how did the story end? So, en route to a battle in 1582, Nobunaga was ambushed by his general Akechi Mitsuri. And this was the Hanoji incident, in which Nobunaga died at this temple on June 21st, just a few days before my birthday. Very sad. Akechi and his soldiers were heading to the same battlefield, but it turned out to be an attack, and it was an act of betrayal from his homie. Akechi was like, okay, we're going to turn against you. Aww. And they just like led him into a trap. And it was a big trap because Nobunaga had 30 men. Akechi, 13,000. So, those numbers.
That's a real ambush.
They weren't messing around. They were like, okay, we gotta bring it. And Yasuke was one of the 30 men who were there. And so they got ambushed, and Nobunaga was at the Honiji Temple, and he performed seppuku. It was a form of ritual suicide that involves slicing of the abdomen. And it was regarded as a way of returning your honor and defeat, because you're like, you're not going to get me. I'm not going to give you that satisfaction. So that's what he did. And it sends the message of, like, you're in control and you're going to win. And the ritual sometimes also involves a second part of the ritual called Kashikunin. And it's after you do that, your friend, your bestie, your ride or die, will then behead you. Now, listen, I don't want to yuck anyone's yum, but I mean, it's tradition. It's a way. But also,
I'm just seeing the friends of mine in my head that I'm like, no.
You're like, one of your sorority sisters is like, oh my girl, they're not going to take us. I'm going to cut my abdomen.
Like in my head, there's like,
I need you to behead me.
Yeah, like there's like a handful of people that I'm like seeing in my head of me being like, I'm going to slice my own abdomen and you, and then I'm like, no, not her. Not her.
Who do you trust?
Not her.
Who do you trust? Yeah. And they did that second part because otherwise it would take you a while to die after you like cut your guts open, right?
Of course.
So it was to help that process along. Because you show like, I'm not afraid to die. You're not going to take me. Boom. And then your friend, like, they're like, okay, they did that. So, okay, let's end this.
That's the signal for me to end this for them. All right, cool.
When you see my guts, chop off my head. All right. So it's traditionally held, though, that Mori Ranmaru, his lover, was the one that did the second part of the ritual. So, I mean, that is love, you know?
That's both, like, beautiful and confusing.
Yeah, which, like, you know what? I want to see this full part of the Netflix series. And I will
say... Yeah, like, I find myself being like, I would watch this movie, but also be like, oh, no.
This is a lot. This is, you know, you thought Brokeback Mountain was rough. Like,
yeah, like,
just imagine.
In my head, I'm just like, I was just like, ooh, this would be a beautiful love story, but also like, oh, what a tragic end.
Oscars all around. I could just see the tears. Like, I miss you.
Like, I could see, oh my God. I could just see so many people winning awards for this, but also people being like, this is problematic.
A whole lot is happening. Ranmaru and the rest of his folks, after they did that, they beheaded him, and then they ignited the temple, and then they barricaded themselves in there. So you're not gonna take them. They didn't run away.
It's like, here's the comedy: is I'm judging this, but I also think like Queen Latifah's death and Set It Off is the greatest thing that was captured on film. So in my head, I'm like, this is up there with Queen Latifah getting shot.
Don't
on
you
purpose.
Wanna be molded in ferns?
That's why I'm
movie.
Just like, wow, this is that movie on steroids. To be like, we're not going out like this. Like, I'm seeing it in my head, and I'm like, wow,
this is incredible. That is just like, that's what the scene would literally be like this. So I think we get Queen Latifah to direct it, and because she knows how to do this. She's like, oh, I did this back and Set It Off.
In my head, I'm like, Barry Jenkins could knock the bricks off this movie. In my head, I'm just seeing
Barry
it,
Jenkins
and I'm
can like, do. Anything. I'm watching his Underground Railroad series, and it is.
Yeah, people were like, no more slave narratives by Barry Jenkins. Never mind.
Okay.
Never mind.
He's the only one that I would allow to do it because who do you trust? And he does it in such like an artistic way. So, okay, well, more on that. We'll put a pin in that later. So the fire killed everybody and the body of Oda Nobunaga. And Yusuke was in the temple when he performed the seppuku. But in the Netflix series, Yusuke is the one that does it and not the lover. So I'm a little disappointed that the lover is, maybe I missed it because I was also working out when I was watching this. So it was in the background. But I don't think the lover was in the series at all. So Netflix, I got a side on you. I love the series. I thought it was great. Yeah. Where's the gay lover? That was a misstep. That was a misstep.
My hope is, much like Mindy Kaling's comment that this is the first teen show about a South Asian woman, I hope this is the first of many projects. Because now that I'm hearing you talk about it, I'm like, I want more of his story from different creators.
100%. I want to see that. I want to see a live action. I want to see.
Yeah.
It's such a fascinating story. And so traditions. Oh, and here's what Yusuke did that could have it changed Japan's history of what ended up unfolding. So tradition holds that Yusuke was the one who took he took Nobunaga's head to save it from the I didn't realize as I was like typing these notes up until I'm saying them out loud how bloody crap everything I'm saying every time I mention the next sentence there's some sort of graphic violent act.
There's like graphic, and I'm like, wow, what a film.
So let's order of operations. He slices his belly open, his lover slices off his head, And then Yasuke takes the head and they run off with it. And then they burn the temple, all the body. So all the bodies get burned. And they did this because if Akichi had gotten the head, he'd been able to hold up that head and be like, look at it. I got him. Look who I'm more powerful. And he would have been like seen as, oh, okay, he's legitimate. Because if you got someone's head, it's like, okay, yeah. You the boss. Like, okay. But since he didn't get any credibility. So he did all this attack and people were like, okay, whatever. You ain't got the head. So he went nowhere. And so Akichi didn't get any support. He was defeated soon after. And Yasuke escaping with the head could have been seen that he changed Japan's history because, you know, this Akichi could have maybe unified it. So, and then shortly after Nobunaga's death, Yasuke joined Oda Nobutada, the son of Nobunaga. And at that point, Yasuke, he was fighting and it was the second battle. And Nobutada had 200 men, not 30. But of course, Akichi still had 13,000. So, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still, they brought up a few numbers, but, you know.
Yeah, he was doing better.
Yep. And then his son, Nobutada, also performed seppuku. So, you know, sliced open his abdomen. I don't know if anybody beheaded him, but the last, Yasuke left that battlefield wounded. And the last record of Yasuke is of the man. He escorted Akichi's troops to a Jesuit mission house, and that was the last record. But that's the story of Yasuke. Wow. And I thoughts, reactions.
I've given so many reactions. I'm just like, this story is fascinating. I'm very fascinated by stories, and it'll come up probably in my corner, is I'm very fascinated by stoicism also. Mm. And so there's something very stoic to me about, like, what you worry about what's in your control and you don't worry about what's not in your control. So there's even something in this like ritualistic suicide that's very like, I can't control the next set of actions that are about to happen, but this little thing right here like has ceremony in what I can control. Some people are probably like, ma'am.
There is, and
that's what I hear when you said that. I was just like, wow, there's something very like, I can't control a lot in this situation, but like this little thing I can, and there's ceremony and ritual to it.
Yeah, he's like, I'm gonna control how I go out. And what it did is, again, and he knew what was at stake by his death, and if his head were to get captured by this other guy, it could put Japan into a different direction.
It's like, it's just, it's very fascinating.
And we're going to get to this next week, but, you know, pre-modern Japan was very accepting and even encouraging of male and female homosexuality and bisexuality, that there were, I didn't realize this, but there were samurais who were homosexual. And so we'll get into that and why, you know, Nobunaga's Japan, you know, again, like he was just like, you know, fuck traditions, fuck rules. Yeah. So next week we're going to dive, because I started going this rabbit hole and I'm like, okay, this is too much for 1 week. So
it's too much for one episode. Like, yeah. But I'm also like very I'm very fascinated by all that stuff. Like, I'm very into like, ooh, history. Like, who's this person? What? Like, who's this warrior? Who's this stoic? But I'm also just like, whoa, that's wild. Because I also like see what you're saying. So I'm like, all I see is like this gorgeous tall black man being through his own stomach, and then like his lover being like, I've got you, and like sure, and then like picking up his head and like on the way out like lighting the whole thing ablaze, and I'm like,
epic.
Wow, that movie would win all the Oscars
all around. Like, Meryl Streep, you can sit this one out. Like, you can take the year off because we've got it.
Yeah, like in my head I'm just like, I think I just started seeing like do I want to see like Daniel Kaluuya make out with like Yaya from Watchmen, and I was like, I would
see that very much. Like, yeah, and I just think it would be so dope to just get to see, I don't know, a black samurai. I'm like, yes. Like, and so the reason why I wanted to talk about this is the connectedness between, I think, black cultures and Asian cultures, and that there is a, you know, in celebrating API history, there is connection to like Yasuke like changed the trajectory of Japan. And so this is a part of, not trying to shoehorn ourselves into API history.
No, but it's a true statement. I mean, it's like, I was talking to a South Asian friend of mine. So like my dad's part of the Little Rock Nine. And so there's a level of black history that I know and understand. It's not my corner, but they're a part of my history that I know and understand. And so, like, and so we were talking, and so my dad had always told me stories about Baird Rustin and, like, and what he meant to the movement. Yeah. And so I had, like, a black queer friend was like, did you know about Baird? And I was like, yeah, I did. And then I had simultaneously a South Asian friend was like, did you know what Baird Rustin did to get South Asian people to America and, like, get them these laws and, like, dispensations? And I was like, yeah, I did. Right. Like, I understood where black history fits into AAPI history. Mm-hmm. And so it was always very confusing to me when I would look around and people would be like, the blacks and the Asians are fighting. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
We are. What?
Yeah, I was always very confused by that too. I didn't realize that there was a fighting until I saw the movie Crash, and I saw, like, a black and Asian person yelling at each other. I'm like, that didn't make sense to me, because that's not the world that I lived in. Like, I grew up and, like, watching, like, Romeo Must Die, and I was like, Dad, that makes sense, because black and Asian folks are ride or die together. And that's how it was in my high school. Like, the blacks and the Filipinos hung out together. Yes. Like,
in my head, I was like, oh, they know, they must, like, again, knowing nothing about rap, I was like, oh, they must know, like, this is where the Wu-Tang obsession came from. Like, this is why Chris Tucker and Jackie Chan make movies. Because, like, we all share this coming to this country and, like, between the internment camps and slavery. We share this connective tissue of, like, ain't this some shit?
Yeah, that's and so, like, Janet Jackson's If music video. Saying, like, it always made sense. The hybrid of, like, black and Asian culture to me always made sense.
Yes. And so when people started saying to me, like, oh, well, my... like, and this was in, like, a Trump era when they were like, oh, well, you know, my Asian grandma, my Chinese grandma, or, like, my South Asian cousins. And I was like, I'm so, like, yeah, like you said, like, in my head, it was Janet Jackson wearing a sari. And it was like, and then it was simultaneously, like, you know, it, as ignorant as it seems, it's like, it was Tiger Woods. Like, to me, it was like, oh, this is what we do. Yeah. It's Karrueche Tran. It's Tiger Woods. Like, We've always shared stuff. We've always cross-cultured, because all I knew were, like, Asian kids that talked with a black scent.
Right.
And all I knew were, like, black kids that grew up in, who, when I got to college, like, every black kid I knew that grew up in Liberty City took a karate class.
I was going to say, they love, like,
if they didn't play football.
My cousin calls himself Bruce Leroy, and that's not his name at all, but, like, obsessed with, like, you know, we all loved, like, Bruce Lee movies growing up. Like, we watched anime. Like, to me, there was such a natural.
Yeah, like, that stoic idea of be like water. To me was like, oh yeah, philosophy. The first introduction a lot of black people have to philosophy is Bruce Lee or kind of other martial arts actors. Yeah. And the first introduction I always got from, like, a Ronnie Chang and that kind of crowd was, like, their first introduction to American culture was black culture.
Yeah.
And then they learned about the American story through the lens of, like, black stories, and it was kind of like, this was up.
That's why I like the story of Yosuke, because to me it shows our lineage so much even further back, and there's probably, like, even more.
Yeah.
So I just, to me, I'm like, I heard this story and I'm like, okay, this makes sense, and I feel like, you know, we're back on track. In 2021, it's finally okay to talk about our mental health, and that's why we're excited to be sponsored by BetterHelp. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions. They'll match you with a therapist in under 48 hours, and it's easy to change therapists if needed. Remember, you don't need a traumatic event to benefit from therapy. Maybe you're feeling anxious or depressed, or your stress feels like it's too much to be managed. We'll get some tools to cope and make life just a little bit easier. And you all know, here at Minority Corner, we are big fans and proponents of therapy. The best advice I ever got from my graduating professor, he said, get into therapy now before it's too late. Also, his advice for people getting married on their wedding day. And it's so true. I don't even date anybody if they have not gone into therapy. We all have trauma, stress, anxiety, things that we're trying to overcome. It's a lot of pressures. And this last year has been bananas. And there's a lot of work to do, and we need you at your best. So get into therapy now before it's too late. Plus, BetterHelp is way more affordable than in-person therapy, but it's also just as effective. Check it out. See if it's for you. So this podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and Minority Corner listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/minority. Once again, that's betterhelp.com/minority.
We have wasted this world. Our magic put a storm in the sky that has rendered the surface of our planet uninhabitable. But beneath the surface, well, that's another story entirely. In a city built leagues below the apocalypse, survivors of the storm forge paths through a strange new world. Some seek salvation for their homeland above. Others seek to chart the vast undersea expanse outside the city's walls. And others still seek, what else? Fortune and glory. Dive into the Aether Sea, the latest campaign from the Adventure Zone, every other Thursday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Mackenzie Green, it's your corner. Take us to it.
So, dear audience, I have to set the stage for you. When James so kindly sent me the kind of how the show works and said, you get your own corner, I had a moment of analysis paralysis. I was like, what do I care about? Oh my gosh, I care about Marvel. I care about reading. I care about musical theater. Yes. I care about legacy. I care about so much. And I got so frozen in the spot, and I was kind of walking through the idea with somebody, and I said, I don't know anything enough to talk for like 10 minutes about it. And they were kind of like, well, why don't you talk about that? And I was like, about what? And they're like, not knowing. And I was like, what the hell are you talking about? I'm gonna waste time on his show talking about not knowing. And they were like, no, talk about. And so they kind of inspired, this person inspired me to talk about, really, it is one of my favorite topics, which is knowing what you don't know. So my favorite question in an interview is when they say, like, what are your weaknesses? And for the longest time, I was that person that was like, I care too much. I work too hard. I'm too perfectionist. And then one day I finally was in an interview and I said, my greatest weakness is that I'm afraid to say I don't know. And the person kind of was like, and the person said, can you explain that? And I said, I think so often, you know, whether it's like Dunning-Kruger effect or whatever, if you know a little bit, you try to turn that little bit into a lot. You know, it's why we all hate
Can you elaborate on Dunning-Kruger effect?
Yes. So Dunning-Kruger effect, I could use it this way. It's like, no, this is perfect. So imagine you're at a Super Bowl party and you're like, I know nothing about football. You will ask questions. You're like, who's that guy? What's the, how many plays can he make? Okay, so how far can he run? It's the guy that knows a little bit about football, that somehow knows more than the coach, knows more than the referee. He knows where the other player should have gone, even though he's done nothing more than played flag football two times in college. Like, the Dunning-Kruger effect is the overconfidence with what little information you have, you think you know everything. And I think the reason I love this concept of not knowing is if we have learned nothing in the last like 4 or 5 years, it's that the inability to say, I don't know, really will get you into a lot of trouble. You know, I love this idea that Epictetus says that you cannot learn that which you do, you are not willing to admit you don't know. You know, I think we see it when Black Lives Matter came to the forefront. You had people who were dogmatically saying systemic racism doesn't exist. And it's kind of like, well, how do you know? And it's like, well, well, I know because I have 3 black friends. And it's like, but do you know that you might not know everything? Or it's like, if I knew it was a problem, I would have seen it. And I see it so often in like, there's a, and so there's an incredible, again, guys, there's gonna be a lot of book recs in here because I love reading. I think it
get
is.
Get the notes. Get
I
the
think
notes.
My favorite thing about reading, you know, and I hate quoting Fran Lebowitz, but Fran Lebowitz is right. Like, a book should be a door, not a mirror. It should be a way for you to step into an experience, a story you don't know. And so I love Adam Grant's current book, Think Again. And there's an incredible interview with he and Ryan Holiday where they talk about this idea of learning about the Civil War. And they say, when you start learning about the Civil War, you go, oh, this is a really complicated, you know, it was about slavery. When you're in elementary school, middle school, high school, you're like, this war was about slavery.
Yeah, they said originally.
Then you really start to dig into it and you start to read about, you know, Andrew Jackson, and you read about the South, and you read about Ulysses S. Grant, and you realize the complicated nature of Abraham Lincoln, and you go, this is a really complicated issue that's really complex, and I don't think we can boil it down to slavery. Now, where most people stop is that it's a really complex issue. Now, if you start to continue to question what you don't know, this doesn't make sense. Well, why did Andrew Jackson think this? Well, how come Lincoln came with this? If you go one step further, continue to ask questions, you will get to the end of the road, which are every PhD we see, Ta-Nehisi Coates, all these people standing there going, yeah, it was about slavery. And I think
I thought it was about states' rights. Exactly. It wasn't about states' rights.
The complication in not knowing is we don't. There's never an end to it. You know, I'm like a newfound baby Stoic. And my favorite thing they tell you in Stoicism is it does not have an end. It is a practice that you have now committed to. You know, I'm a big fan of, I literally keep a list of things I don't know. Everything from like, how do boats float? To like, how do people make their own products? To, you know, understanding conflicts in other countries. Like, I know the more I try to learn, the more I realize I don't know. And I think that's a scary thing to people. You know, it's that Mark Twain quote about you always want to keep your shore of ignorance in sight. You know, you're constantly, the more you learn about something, the more and more that stacks up. Like, we talked about a black samurai. There are going to be people that are like, I don't understand who the samurai were. Now you're going to dig into the samurais. Now you're going to figure out you know nothing about Japanese history. Now you're going to go down this long road. And at the end of it, you'll be like, I have spent 3 months randomly learning about Japanese culture and samurai culture because I wanted to watch an anime and it made me ask questions. You know, I think that's the beauty. You know, I look at like people freaking out about Pluto not being a planet. What you're really freaking out about is not the idea that it's not a planet. It's that it shakes you some way to think, I thought I knew. I thought I knew all the planets. And now you're telling me that 20 something years later, I was wrong. If I'm wrong about this, what else am I wrong about? But I think there's something beautiful in finding out that you're wrong, that you don't know as much as you think you do.
And I think it allows, but I love this idea and concept. We are going Brené Brown hardcore
we are
right
getting
now
in it.
On this. Like, I love it. Because like, I think what it does is it also, I think it touches into certain things about fear and vulnerability. You have to get vulnerable.
Yes.
You have to say, like, to be able to say, I don't know. And it can be a little bit of a scary place because of the unknown, right? Like, to keep ourselves safe, we like to, like, know all the different things are, right? And then I think the other layer of it, too, I see this from two different directions, right? We kind of were talking, I love the two different directions of things. We had brought this up before about like how sometimes the QAnon and the hotels
are saying the same thing.
From different sides, you know, like the QAnon people are like, we don't like anybody that's not white, or like, you know, white supremacy. And then the hoteps like black supremacy. We don't like people who aren't anything but black.
Yeah.
But on the same front, on that same front of things, not knowing, I could see myself as a black gay man feeling the need sometimes to feel like I know all these things. Yes. I don't want to be deemed as stupid or less than. And so maybe I've had to like speak up in times when like, maybe I didn't really know everything that I was talking about. And then I could also see it from when you first were describing this, I'm like, oh, this is like white male mediocrity, right?
It does. It feels very
everything. But then I'm like, oh, I think as well, I probably have been guilty of this from a need to prove myself, like similar to like, you know, Leanne and Little Mix, to bring it back to Little Mix, of her feeling like she had to work harder than all the other girls in the group. We feel that sometimes in the black community. But what I love about this is like, there's a freedom and just like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It, like what a, I can feel the weight on my shoulders just going off of like, yeah, I don't know.
I drive people crazy all the time.
Let's get some more information.
Well, that's the thing is like, I'm always like, tell me more. Like if somebody slides, like there's a perfect example. Somebody slid in my DMs with a video that was from a very like conservative IG page. And my knee-jerk reaction is to be like, you're wrong, you're glib, taking from Tom Cruise, you know nothing. And instead I stopped and I kind of said like, I don't understand, there's not enough information here. Like, you know, this feels like a promo video. Could you share with me maybe though, like some writers or resources that have drawn you to this page? And the person said, well, I didn't. I just thought you should see this. And I was like, listen, I don't agree with Thomas Sowell. I'll read a Thomas Sowell book. I'll watch the Thomas Sowell documentary. Right. I watched that doc and was very confused and had notes and had to say to myself, like, go into this. Like, the first lesson you kind of learn in, like, this really great meta learning teacher, Jim Quick, he tells you the first step is, like, forget what you know. And so I had to, like, literally go into it and be like, okay, you know nothing. And then just start writing notes and be like, I don't understand what that means. What is this? Okay. I'm curious. Okay, well, he's an economist. I wonder if that maybe, you know, there's a level of scientific thinking. Like, my years ago, and I think Netflix still has it, there is a documentary about flat earth conspiracy theorists. And this was, like, pre-QAnon coming to the forefront. And I thought one of the most powerful things, there's a black scientist, it's always a black man trying to find the middle ground. He talks about...
We're bridge builders.
Yeah, and so it's funny because it's, like, all these kind of, like... all these scientists are like, these people are morons, they're idiots, blah blah blah. And this one black scientist was like, I go to the flat earth convention every year to talk to them about scientific thinking, not to talk to them about how they're wrong or how they're dumb, but the idea that real thought, real progress comes from asking a question and then testing that hypothesis. And he said, the problem is, and this was pre, like, people storming the Capitol, pre-QAnon boards. He was like, the problem is we start with what we believe is the truth, and then we look for confirmation bias. We look for things that confirm what we thought. Okay. It's the, we all saw it with the things that were being sold on, I think it was Wayfair, where people were like, I told you children are being sold because why is there a Wayfair chest for $1,200? And it was like, would rather what this guy would argue scientific thinking is like, why is there a Wayfair chest versus 12,000? You know what? Let me email Wayfair and be like, hi, what's the quality of this chest that would cause it to be $1,200? You know, maybe reach out to, like, I think all of this is a very circuitous way of getting back to my greatest fascination in saying I don't know is trying to learn to be a better thinker, trying to learn to be a better question asker, because I, much like you and kind of like what we were joking about with Rob, is like, I feel like George Floyd was murdered and the entire world kind of looked around and said, oh my gosh, there are so many incredible black voices. Let me ask this person to be a part of my world. And the problem is a lot of us felt that twice as hard to get half as far thing of, okay, maybe I'm a comedian, maybe I'm a marketer. Well, I'm now going to become an expert in this thing. And so the problem has been, at least for me this last year, I feel like people have looked at me when anything has happened and been like, so what's our solution? And I have felt the need to be like, well, I can answer it. I can do this. Yeah. I can do the research and answer it. And I think these last few, probably started 2021, of really digging into, like, kind of scientific thought and stoicism and all this stuff, I have realized there's so much power in saying to somebody who's like, such and such happened. What are our thoughts? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm going to go look for answers. I encourage you to go look. And then I'm happy to meet up later and have a conversation about what we both found. And, you know, so this corner, this nonsense corner that I have ruined on James's show.
No, actually, you literally did, like, such a full circle TED Talk. I'm on the edge of my seat. Like, I'm like, okay, she bring it, not to, like, how the sausage is made. It's like, I feel like you're giving a TED Talk and I'm like, oh, you know what? I like what you did. You brought this point and then you brought, like, it back over
back here.
Okay, I see what you're
it's
doing.
Like, I truly have found there is so much ego in being like, I can do it, that there's so much ego in that. And for anybody that wants to read it, Ryan Holiday's Ego is the Enemy, there's so much power in this idea that when Branch Rickey said to Jackie Robinson, I don't need somebody that can fight. I need somebody that has the ability not to fight. And I think there is so much power, especially for us minorities, in taking a pause. And not a pause as in, like, letting people beat the shit out of you, letting them take advantage of you, letting them step on you. But taking that pause to be like, I want to take a second to figure out what my response is, because I'm not about to be reactionary to yours, because in this moment I don't have an answer, but the answer I'm about to give is going to be one that's going to end up on WorldStar and now I'm going to be in somebody's video. It's instead like stopping being like, I don't know. And you're not about to force me into a response or a moment I don't want to be in,
right.
You know? And so This is a very long-winded way of saying, guys, there is power in I don't know, because it means that you have found a limit that you can now push past and become even better for the next moment.
Yes. Because that's where the work can really begin. You get to your limit of, oh, I don't know. Like, if you just even think about, like, I don't know, doing math, and if all I know is, like, I don't know, 2 + 2 = 4, I'm like, okay, I wonder what comes next.
Yeah.
And let me figure out what does come next. And that's where, as opposed to, like, if, oh, you know everything, or you're so afraid for your own world to be rocked, then we can't move that. If everyone is so into, this is my belief and that can't get moved, well, there's not room for the new discoveries. There's so many things that we're doing and thinking now that 2,000 years from now, they're going to be like, whoa, they didn't realize that the universe was round or something, or like that.
I thought Ryan Holiday said the best thing. He was like, if your beliefs are sound, and my grandmother used to say this, because my grandmother was a staunch Christian. She was a strong Christian woman. Mm-hmm. If you came into her house with like the Quran, she was like, okay, let's read it. Because in her heart, it's what I've heard Ryan Holiday say. If your beliefs are truly grounded in something, somebody questioning them,
nothing can shake it.
And we see it with critical race theory. If you truly believe what you're saying, if you think it is the smartest, the only right answer, then going down the road of reading coats, of reading the, you know, story of Reconstruction, all this stuff should lead you back to the road of what, like what I said in the beginning about the Civil War. If you, as a teacher, if you're sitting in the front, if you're teaching these fifth graders and you're like, it was about slavery, but I'm gonna let them go on this journey, and they'll come back to you one day and be like, thanks, it was about slavery, I went on a long journey, but you were
I got back here, and that's my thing
about like any of these things we believe. If you truly are somebody who is out here fighting the good fight to dismantle systemic racism, you know, it's what Eisenhower said. This is a real leap, but in terms of like talking about Hitler, he said the problem was the good people read the good books and the bad people read the bad books. And so the good people didn't know what the bad people thought. So if you are somebody right now, myself, I am putting myself in there, and you're like, I can't stand, I can't stand Candace Owen. I can't stand this person. I hate to say it. Yeah. You might have to try to bootleg the book somewhere so that you know what argument you're trying to make.
Right.
So that you know what you're trying to counter. So you know what, because not knowing
is never going to serve you. This is why I watch The View. I watch
The
View, and Meghan McCain makes me want to claw my eyes out sometimes.
Yeah.
But I need to, like, hearing these points, it makes me, okay. It makes me, like, come at something from a different direction and angle, because if I'm just in my own like circle, my liberal bubble circle, it's not going to prepare me for actually getting actual shit done.
Yes.
It's not going to get me, help me to meet people where they are and don't leave them there.
Yeah.
Right. Brittany, there's some people that are on the outsides of the crazy town that you can,
people,
we need a majority.
Yeah. And those are people that you'll find if you choose to read the Adam Grant book, dear listeners, you'll find like, it tells you like, hey, you've tried all these roads, and the person does not want to scientifically think, they don't want to figure out what they don't know, and now you have the answer. But for, I feel like I myself, there is so much power I have learned in being like, I don't know, but I'm gonna go find out. And there's so much more that you offer people in that pursuit to find out what you don't know than it is to fall victim to the Dunning-Kruger effect and be like, I know three things and I knocked the brick off those three things.
I love it so much. This was a fabulous corner. I just feel like we got to go to your TED Talk. It's okay to not know, and that's a great starting place. Well, that's going to do it for us. Isn't Mackenzie Green so wonderful? She will definitely, definitely be back for more Minority Corner. We love it. And I just want to say a special thank you to all of you who were able to participate this year for the Maximum Fun Drive. We had reached our goal. Our goal was 750 new and upgrading members, and we hit it. We smashed it. We ended up around 956. So a big thank you. And we'll at some point coming at you will be the Bridgerton Bridger Brunch finale, as we promise. We will watch it, and it'll be great, and it'll be lovely. Quick little fact check. We said four little Beyoncés in the group Little Mix. There's actually three now because Jesse did leave, but they're still rocking and rolling really great. We'll link some of their songs in the show notes and videos. Y'all, if you're not already a mixer, you're gonna be now. Check out that documentary. Leanne even tried to approach Sony and was like, we need to change things, really going in hard on it and changing this behind the scenes. That's everything we'd ever ask for and a pop group. Go at it. All right, I'm going to get out of here. We're going to get out of here. And we're going to see y'all next week. It's a live episode is going to be happening again. So you can catch the live stream. We'll put a link in the show notes. And Nekki will be here. You can catch our faces. It'll be Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific time on the YouTubes. Click the link. Watch us. It is all going down live. Look at our faces. They're pretty great. And we'll see you then. All right. Big thank you to Sarah Brown, our editor, and our new production coordinator, Lori Fowler. Thank you so much coming on board here. See, look, after the fun drive, doing big things. And thank you all to you for listening to Minority Quarter, because together we're the majority. Love y'all.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.